Michelle and I'm an alcoholic. Oh my gosh, first and foremost, welcome to anyone who's new or is new and didn't identify. Anybody celebrating a milestone that hasn't yet gotten to stand up yet, congratulations or happy birthday. And Mark, thank you so much for asking me to come out. It's always an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sitting there and I keep taking these like really deep breaths, right? Like I'm like, I need to find my center. It's been such a crazy weekend and I can't find it, you know? And it always reminds me that sound, that feeling that I seek when I sit my butt down in a chair in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is the same relief I was seeking when I was trying to get loaded, you know? And I took that first drink and I felt the relief, and then I tried to take a lot more and I never found it again. But I do find it today. I do find it. Eventually, I would have found it. You know, the crazy thing is when Vlad was speaking, Vlad, thank you so much for coming with me. Not like you had a choice, but you also didn't have a choice, but you do have a choice. But yeah, you were speaking, and I found my center during your share. I was really counting on you to be funny, so that way I didn't have to be. He normally is very funny, but you were serious this time. But thank you, because I found my center. Unfortunately, I lost it as soon as I checked my phone. I'm just working at regaining it. And like that's a lot like how my sobriety is today too, right? Like I get somewhere and I'm like, oh, this is good, I like it. And then it's like, nope, not here. You know, like we're going to keep growing, we're going to keep doing it. I'm like, but I just figured it out, right? Like when you're raising children, you know, I just get them to their next developmental stage, right? And all of a sudden they change it up on me, right? You used to go to bed and take your nap at 3 o'clock and now you take it at 6 o'clock. Like what happened all of a sudden? But yeah, my sobriety is constant, ever-changing, and thank you to my friends that showed up. Like, it's so good to see familiar faces, and even people that, like, I just happened to run into again here at this meeting. It's really cool. You know, I must be doing something right. You must be doing something right if we're running into each other in random places. And, gosh, yeah, I have a sobriety date of December 7th of 2020. It's not my first, but I do have faith and hope it will be my last, and you know, it's only by God's grace that I'm sober today, but it's by my footwork that I stay that way. And some days it's a lot of footwork, you know. Some days that footwork, it seems like I'm doing this laundry list of activities in order to feel right, like just okay in my skin. And other days it's like a simple, like, bang, 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 I'm good, let's go, God, we got it, right? And today it's so wild. Like I was doing my footwork this morning. I woke up and my daily routine is I have taught myself. And mind you, this was not a thought I came to when I first came back to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I had to teach myself that anytime I open my eyes or even before I open my eyes, my first thought is like, thank you, dude, for another day. Right? Like, and it was dude at first because I couldn't even say the word God. Like I'm recovering Catholic. Like that was not something that I was willing to do at the time. And that thought, that idea, that concept, that three-letter word kept me out of the rooms for a really long time. So it was, hey, dude, you know, thank you for another day. And then I open up my eyes, and I'm like, let's get to it. First it's the coffee, then it's sit down. Let's do the readings. Let's pull out the book. And I start doing my inventory slash journaling. And before I even got to that point today, my head was already swirling, but in all the best ways, right? And I landed on this thought, and I have this, like, funny joke with my sponsor, and we always talk about how Disney movies should start, like, a class action lawsuit for the participants who viewed those movies as a child, like, myself included, right? Like, I grew up with this really distorted idea of, like, that's how happiness was supposed to look. I find my Prince Charming, he treats me very well, I don't need anything or anything great or special, and then, you know, stuff happens and then everything gets better, or you just don't even get to find out about that, right? But like, I want to skip through the forest, I want like the birds to sit on my shoulders, like, so I'm having all these thoughts in my head about it, and then I kind of paused and I was like, but my happy ending did come true. Like, spoiler alert, I didn't know. You know, and I remember, like, at the height of my disease, you know, I am not in a good place. I'm in a dark place. And the crazy thing about it is that I'm surrounded by anything and everything I could have ever wanted, and yet I'm still like, is this it? Like, so incredibly unhappy, right? And I never thought that when I came back to the rooms in 2020 that I would find a happy ever after again, or that things could get better. And the book talks about that long road of reconstruction is ahead and we must take the lead, which tells me I have to take the lead. I have to put in the work. And when I finally became willing to put in the work, I started getting my happy ending. And although it doesn't always look like it, but, you know, Vlad talked about that family vacation, and I think that's why the thought came. Like, I'm in a home with my children, a bonus child, children that aren't mine, a person that I never would have imagined being with. And I'm in this, like, million-dollar house overlooking a cliff going, how did this happen? How did this happen? I didn't do this. Like, you give it up to me. Like, if I start taking the credit, like, I only know how to make things worse and get loaded and make you have a horrible time because I'm having a horrible time. And I just felt so filled with gratitude that, like, I do have that today. Everything that I had ever worked for, I have, and then some, right? But I don't get to keep it if I don't keep working at it. And that's what I've been taught here. And some things that I've had to learn over some really hard, tough lessons in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous this time, and by doing my steps, you know, there's two things that I know firsthand that I thought I would never, ever say. And the first thing is that I have a loving God, or I have faith, a trust, and hope in something that I choose to call God. The second thing is I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I will do anything and everything for AA. Mind you, I have been to San Diego, San Fernando. Where am I? Palmdale? I'm in Palmdale all in one day. You know, not to mention, like, where my head's been at throughout the whole entire process. But, you know, something that I got to discover about myself this time around through the steps is that I'm the last to know. Like, I am always the last to know. This inside joke that I have between me and my sponsor, it's like, I'm the last to know I'm a hypocrite, I'm the last to know I have an anger problem, I'm the last to know that the problem is me and not you, I really was the last to know that I was an alcoholic, or more so just really the last one to finally admit it. And I used to think that if I would have stayed when I first got here, how different my life would be, but that wasn't my story. You know, I had to stop shaming myself. I had to stop shooting on myself and think about all the things I could have, should have, would have done. Like, it didn't happen. It doesn't matter. It's gone, right? The moment is now. The moment is today, right? Living in the moment. I was not doing well in the car. I was not. I was freaking out because if you're not early, you're late. And I'm like, this is not going to go good for us. You know, I come from a long line of, like, perfectionism, and I'm going to tell you, I really thought my entire life that if I figure out this way to be perfect, I'll be better. So when you tell me that there's an oil rigger turned over and my time just went from right on time to 15 minutes almost late, I'm like, I'm not perfect. This is a problem. My alcoholism seeps right in. But we made it, and we're here, and I am so grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. But yeah, like, back to the stuff that I didn't know. I didn't know, and I want to be very clear that, like, I have a deception perception problem, right? So anything that I share with you about anybody from my story is how I viewed it, not necessarily how reality happened. But I grew up in a home, very working class parents. I grew up in daycare, 6 in the morning, 6 at night. Catholic religion. I had a mom who was verbally abusive. I had a dad who didn't stand up for himself, let alone me. And I really thought that the key to their love or getting their love or the key to happiness would be in perfecting whatever it is that they asked of me. You know, and as a little young child, I got these dresses with matching hats and purses handmade for me, and I was paraded around, don't speak unless spoken to. You know, it doesn't necessarily, like, it doesn't talk, but she looks great, right? Like, that kind of idea, you know, and there would be all this cussing and screaming and anger that's going on inside the house, and as soon as we step outside the door, you're expected to put the smile on your face and pretend like nothing happened, and we're get parading off into church, and, you know, something similar to this. I had a feeling. I said to my friend Tim, I'm like, I got the ick, you know, like, then I realized it's a non-denominational church, so I'm okay. But as we're off the way to church, right, it's like this screaming, it's this yelling, it's this anger, it's this hatred, it's all this stuff that's going on. And the moment that we're in the room and we're holding hands and we say, sorry, all is forgiven, and I feel great. And then as soon as we walk back to the car and start driving away, it's all the same stuff again, right? And I quickly figured out that if I just say sorry, I can get away with whatever I want. Or if you just don't find out, I'll be better. You know, and that same mom and You know, she used to give me these laundry lists of things that she wanted me to do, right? And I would complete them to a T, to her exact specification, and be like, look what I did, isn't this great? And I would always get the, but you maybe could have. Next time you should. What that did to an alcoholic like me, that had this God-sized hole that needed your love to feel whole, is it crushed me. And I really thought that if I'm better next time, I'll be better. And if I only manage well, I won't hurt. And I don't know if I was born with that idea or bred for it. Chicken or the egg, I don't really think it matters. The fact is that that's how I felt. And by the time I took my first drink at 14, I want to tell you I needed it. Like, I heard people talk about that in the rooms, right? Like, I needed that drink too, but not necessarily so much of what I've heard, but for a different experience. By the time I was 14, I was already, resorting in alcoholic-type behaviors, self-harm, disordered eating. I couldn't stand being with myself for more than 3 minutes, and I know this because I would time it in the bathroom of my home. It was the only place that I actually had a lock, and I would stare at myself and talk to me, or this other version of me, in the mirror. And it took about 3 minutes before I had to act out in one of those ways. So by the time I took that drink, I got the, oh my God, I can breathe. This is exactly what I needed. Not because I liked the taste, not because I necessarily needed more right then, I just know that I immediately loved the effect that it produced. For the moment I took the first drink, I already had 7 more lined up, so I was never like a gradual let's get there drinker. I'm always trying to get where I'm going, and I'm not sure where that is, but I know that it's in between like the 3rd, 7th, or 15th shot. So just line them all up and let me pound them as fast as I can, get spadaxed out of my mind because I want to go there. Where I'm going, still not sure, but as soon as I get there, I feel really great and it's all awesome, and then I pass there into violent land. But the great thing about it is that I was free. Like, I didn't care about what you thought about me. I didn't care how I dressed. I didn't care how I sounded. I didn't necessarily need more. I just wanted this to stay quiet. I didn't hurt. And as I've already shared, I sought that same feeling for the next 20 plus years of my life, that same relief of turning this off. And I never found it again until December 7th of 2020, and when I fully resurrendered, right? And I finally, for the first time in my life, can concede to my innermost self that I think I have this thing, and I think I might be an alcoholic, right? But more importantly, what the key, more critical phrase for me to say was is that I am a successful, capable, intelligent woman who's done a lot of things in this world, but I have no idea how to stay sober. Will you please show me? Everything changed. Was it easy? No, but everything changed from that admission, right? Speeding it all up, because as you guys know how it goes, like, it's really kind of unimportant, but here's the highlighted version, right? Like, still thinking if I manage well, still knowing I'm not what you guys are, but still realizing that if I figure it out, I'll be okay. And I successfully built up this life for myself, and just that actor, right? The double life. And really, behind closed doors, I was dying of alcoholism from the inside. But very outwardly, I had it all. I had met my husband in the height of my disease, and he figured out how I used, he figured out how I drank, and he's like, I'm figuring out you need help, is what you need. But at the time, I was just a binge drinker. And I don't know if you drink like how I drink, but I have that cunning, baffling, and powerful disease that tells me that I don't have to drink under the bridge. I don't have to drink when I wake up. So you're not an alcoholic. You just maybe have a pill problem or a drug problem. It tricks me into thinking that what I'm doing is okay. But it wasn't okay. Because it's not how much I drink. It's not when I drink. It's not even what I drink. It's what happens to me when I take the first drink. And whether it's a drink, a drug, a dude, or a food, they all affect me in the same way. I take one and I need 17 more every time. Take a little from you, take a little from you, until I can't get any more. And then I'm hurting, I'm irritable, I'm restless, I'm discontented. And at the age of 20, I accidentally overdosed and I landed myself in the ICU, and I was told to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Simi Valley, California, and I sat down, and And no one said, hi, my name's Michelle, what's your name? No one said, hey, just keep coming back. No one said that word, you don't have to believe in how you brought up believing. It could be anything you want. And if they did, I don't know, maybe they did. I just wasn't ready to hear it. If you're going to tell me on my 21st birthday I wasn't allowed to get loaded and take a shot, like, you're out of your mind. I'll just hide it better. And I had successfully convinced one more time, yet again, the people around me that I can do this, and I promise you, to my innermost self, that I'll be better, that it won't be like how it was last time. And it never was. It doesn't matter how many times I promise. It doesn't matter how many times I've tried to manage. The outcome is still always the same, and I could not get it. I could not understand that was my insanity of thinking that next time will be different, and it never was. You know, and in 2019, I had built up a beautiful, beautiful life for myself. I had 3 beautiful children. I had multiple houses. I had cars. I had standing in my community. I had money in the bank. I had a husband that was trying to save me from the moment he met me. I was PTA president, for Christ's sake. You know, like, I was the girl that was putting my kids in a wagon loaded to pass around flyers in our neighborhood to start the neighborhood watch program, also being the same PTA mom that was falling asleep on her lawn in the middle of the night because I couldn't handle my alcohol anymore. Insanity. And I had my last physical altercation with that man, you know, and I remember things that he said. I remember the way he looked at me, but more importantly, this is what I remember. I remember for years I would walk down the steps of this 5-bedroom, beautifully remodeled home, and I'd look at this house, and I'd look at this husband, and I'd look at these kids, and I'd think about that money, and I'd think about the job, and I'd think about my standing, and be like, is this it? It sucks. And I threw it all away, you know, and I had that one last physical altercation with him. I was asked to leave the home. I took everything that was important to me, and it was a tiny suitcase, 2 pairs of pants, a shirt, and 26 different bottles of medication, and I left 3 beautiful kids sleeping in their bed, and I never came home. That is my truth, right? And the sad thing about it is that it gets worse. Like, that's not even where the trap door was. There was a bottom to all of that. And I entered into a 90-day treatment program. I was told if I didn't go to treatment, I would never see those kids again. So I did what I thought you needed me to do. The problem was that I could not take step one honestly, which is the basic principle of step one. I could not admit to myself, concede to my innermost self, that I have this thing. And I was yet again checking off the boxes, yet again thinking that if I just manage well, I'll be fine. I'll figure it out. I started divorcing that man while I was in treatment, and, you know, because if he'd be gone, I'd be better, and custody of my children were reassigned, and still to this day, I have 13% custody of those 3 beautiful kids, and that's what I thought, right? And I always have to say it like that because I never want to forget what my deception perception problem will make me believe, and what I know to be true is this, is that stone cold sober, I can still place myself in a position to be harmed. Stone cold sober, I can still access my own self-will, that my alcoholism makes me do things that I don't want to do, that I think I have to do because it's my only choice, and that's not what happened. The reality is that sober as a brand new day, I willfully signed away custody of those 3 beautiful kids in order for my right to get loaded. But unable to make that own admission, I victimized myself yet one more time to give myself the excuse to get loaded. And I really thought, as I sat in my home group with Rafters in Santa Clarita, I'm not an alcoholic, you're just a pill head, so if you stay away from those, you'll be fine. I walked down the street, I grabbed a case of Coors Original, the banquet beer, because I'm a fancy lady, and a big thing of Patron, and I took a shot and I drank a beer, and I did that for 2.5 hours, and I didn't even get a buzz, and I knew it, treatment fixed me, and I was saved, right? As long as they don't find out, was my only thought. You give me 2 weeks, I'm back up to drinking on Friday to Saturday. You give me 3 weeks, I'm back drinking now Thursday through Sunday. You give me 4 weeks, I'm back to using some dry goods that we all use in order to help us drink longer. And you give me 5 weeks, and I want to tell you and remind you again that I was a PTA mom that had no idea how to get drugs on the street, and now I'm using crack cocaine. And with all due respect to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I say that, and it's important for me to make that justification, because I always think that if it's not this, it's going to be this. And if I don't have a problem with heroin, I'm sure I can do this, but really the central fact of it is that that's my alcoholism. One more time, helping me believe and aiding in my destruction. When really the basic problem is that I'm an alcoholic. And I love that I know that today. I really know that next time will not be different when it comes to alcohol, right? The book reminds me, though, that it's alcohol in any form, and I'm very clear to hang on to those words because I have a lot of different forms, as I already kind of told you, right? Like, I have to be careful. My alcoholism will also show up in my anger. It'll show up in my envy. It'll show up in my lust, in my pride, in my jealousy, like in these defects, right? So the way that I live today, my life, is I stay heavy in 6 and 7 because it's these things that always trip me up and make me think that you're the problem, and if you go away or stop, I'll be better. When really, I have to work on changing me. And that was not a concept that I came into these rooms with, and it took me a while. I remember asking my sponsor, how does one accept the unacceptable? And she said, baby, one day at a time. And so that's what I did, you know, and right before I came back into the rooms again, you know, I have to remember again what it's like. I had an old-timer who I got to meet in the park this time. His name was John Bowman, and maybe some of you guys know him, but I got a lot of time spent with him at the 12 noon Central Park meetings, and he would always tell me that, you know, if you don't remember your last drink, you don't have one. And so it's really important for me to remember that, yet again, I think I'm just going out to the bar for a couple shots, and it's always 17, you know, and I wake up blacked out in a hotel room. I just got the crap beat out of me one more time. And my first thought is not that I drank too much or shouldn't have done drugs. My first thought is that he left me. How dare him leave me? And I remember staring at myself in the mirror, and this is what I never want to forget. I prayed to something outside of myself, and I asked to die. Because it would be a lot easier than doing whatever it is you guys are doing. And really, I was in fear. I was afraid of living life and not knowing how. I had no skills. I had no tools. But yet I felt pretty capable, so it was a really weird feeling, you know? And again, some more insanity. 2 days later, I repeated the same behavior with the same person, thinking it'd be different. And this sobriety date was the first time ever in my entire life, and there is no exaggeration by that. This is the first time ever in my entire life that I woke up with the thought that, like, I think it's me. Like a tiny bit. Teeny tiny, right? But that was my mustard seed. That was my moment of clarity, and that's all I needed. And something happened to me from that point to that point where I realized that, like, it's not them. It's me. And I remembered, you know, that when that seed was planted, I remembered the first thing back was what someone told me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, the only thing that you ask to change is everything. And I'm like, well, that sounds like too much. I can't do it, you know? And I won't. And I did it, right? But I heard that again this time. And what they didn't mean him or it or the car or the job. What they meant was everything here. How I perceive life, how I go about life, who I hang out with, how I think, you know, what am I doing, right? And I got back into the work. You know, I remember calling that sponsor back that I had before, and she said, okay, I'll see you on Tuesday. And I said, well, don't you want to know what happened? She said, no, bring your book, I'll see you later, and hung up on me. And we got into the work, and we got in the steps, and I became very active and very vigilant about understanding what this meant. And I want to tell you, I do study the big book because I do believe it's supposed to be read that way. Could I quote you the pages? No, but I will tell you that there are things that happen in my daily life, and James will call me on the phone and he'll say something, or I'll call him, and all of a sudden I hear that one line that I needed to hear, right? And recently the line that keeps coming up over and over and over again is that no one likes the self-searching, the leveling of pride, of our shortcomings that this program requires as this successful consummation, which tells me I have to do those things for this to work. Ugh. Who wants to do that? I don't. Who wants to be reminded one more time that you're not as great as your head tells you you are? Who wants to yet again wake up and do another inventory? Who wants to keep praying to this thing, right? that I some days really believe in and other days, I don't know. Not really me, but the longer I stay here, the more it is me. You know, I have gotten a big, beautiful life as a result of the steps and the program and the principles and good sponsorship and a loving fellowship. Like, I want to keep that. I never again want to take for granted this gift that's been so freely given to me, right? So what am I going to do to protect it today? And it's these little stories that I've been able to collect throughout my time in sobriety. And, you know, one of the craziest story that I stand here today and, you know, I lost my center a little bit because I had to go address it is, like, back to those kids, right? Like, those kids not want anything to do with me when I came back here to, look at me, I'm sober, you know, this is great, your mom is healthy again, we should pray to God, you know, and they're like, who is this lady? Like, we're not doing this. A lot of stuff happened, right? And at 6 months of sobriety, I yet again did an unthinkable act, and it's these things that I have to pay attention to, because if I'm not having an open mind to these blessings that are really happening around me, I won't see all the gifts that are near me. And really, that day, at 6 months of sobriety, I acted in a way that I thought I never would act sober. I thought that that version of myself only came out when I was drinking or when I was loaded. And I proved myself wrong in a way that I never thought to be possible, in a very public, demeaning, demoralizing way. When I took a drink again, thinking it'd be different, one of my favorite lines in the book, it talks about one could go out blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation or accept spiritual help. And I want to tell you, if I make that more personal to me, what it looks like is take a drink or never see your kids again. And I'm the real alcoholic that says, can you give me 24 hours? And I take a drink. A normal person doesn't have to get 24 or 48 a week, 5 minutes, to decide between taking a drink or ever seeing their kids again. But I do. And at 6 months of sobriety, based on my behavior, I was faced with that same question yet again. Take a drink, Michelle? Or never, and this time truly never, get to see those kids again. You might be going to jail too. And I said I need 24 hours. I still ask for 24 hours. But this time I did things a little bit different. This time I had just enough willingness to maybe hopefully help me, help you, help us change. Right? And I don't know where it came from. I did not have that power in me before that moment. But in that moment I did. And my self-will asked, but my actions showed different. And what I did instead is I called that sponsor. She told me what to do. I called another lady who I knew had a similar story to mine in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she told me to stay right there, and she came and grabbed me. Then I went to a meeting, and then I went to another meeting, and then I went to another meeting. And then I found myself in a sober member's home, this person's home, actually, and there was nothing weird at the time. He was just a friend. But I found myself in his home because I needed to feel safe. And I wasn't sure if I was going to drink or not, but I knew that I didn't necessarily want to. And on the counter of his home was a big book, and in it said, the name of the game is not to stop drinking as it is in to stay sober. And I got my answer. And what that told me is that, Michelle, you don't need to know what the solution is. Michelle, you don't need to figure it out. And Michelle, you can be afraid, just stay sober. You just do it afraid. And I have been trying to reconstruct a relationship with those children for a long time now. You know, when I got here originally, it was in 2019, and now we're in 2025. And I'm 4.5 years sober, and this is a true time in sobriety where I've put in every effort, and we have had bumps along the way. But what I can tell you is that those kids aren't afraid of me anymore. Yes, custody is still limited. Yes, I still pain and ache over the fact that I can't be more present like how I would want to, but I have everything that I need right now. You know, AA has taught me how to put their needs before mine, and the reality is that they're doing just fine without me. They are happy, they are healthy, they are well adjusted. But where the real work had to come was towards my resentments against those people that took my children, right? those people that I blamed, those people that I used to victimize myself so that I could get loaded, and I had to put in work that almost nearly killed me. In 2023 to 2024, I was rotting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had over 10 sponsees. I had over 5 commitments. I was secretary in 3 meetings. Like, you name it, I was doing it. AA captain, right? And yet I still found myself wanting to blow my head off here. Why? Because I was changing. And it was the most uncomfortable change I had ever gone through my entire life. And I had been praying to help relieve me of the bondage of self, relieve me of the pain, the anger, the resentment, the hostility that makes me think that getting loaded would be a good idea. And as a result of that, I successfully, at 3.5 years, got to make a face-to-face amends to those people. It took me some time. James knows. You know, and I'm so grateful. Like, if it was not, similar to what Vod said, if it was not for the people of Alcoholics Anonymous that were there to pick me up and walk me through and hold my hands and just listen to me scream, thank you, James. Like, I don't know if I would be able to be standing here right now. Do I still struggle with, like, I get the phone call and I'm like, eek, oh my God, I don't want to do this. Like, ew, you yuck me out, or I can't stand you. Yes, all the time. But as a result of working on that relationship through this program, it's affected my children. And I don't know. I don't know where I would be without the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, let's even take out the rooms. I don't know where I would be without the steps and the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and a loving sponsor who has held my hand through this process and helped guide me to show me what I could potentially do to help relieve the pain and suffering that I'm in. So that way I don't think that a drink or a drug can ever solve my problems again. I have a happy, healthy home today. And that relationship with those children, you know, like I got to sit in a bed with my son yesterday morning and he told me he had a girlfriend. TMI, don't tell him I told you guys that. But like, those were not things that we were sharing with one another. You know, I never thought I would be here, you know. I was a girl that really thought that if you would just change, my life would be so much better. And, you know, as I close up with my time, I want to also focus on this, that mom that I talked about, you know, at the beginning. Again, resentment. My life is just riddled with resentment, just ick, everywhere, just everywhere. And I could not understand that, like, that concept of, you know, drinking the poison, expecting someone else to die was me. I didn't know. And that mom, I grew up hating, but still wanting and vying for her love, this really weird toxic triangle of a relationship, right? I turned 4, and 4 days later, she passed away, very unexpectedly. But I want to tell you that at 90 days of sobriety, this sobriety, I cut her off. I had to learn what a boundary meant, not necessarily between her and me, but that I can set a boundary and actually keep it. This book taught me how to do that. Up until she passed away, we had just gotten to the point where we were finally hearing one another. I finally understood that I'm never going to change her. More so, I finally understood that it's not my job to change her. I'm asking her to love me, so why wouldn't I just do the same to her? These, like, monumental moments of clarity continue to keep happening for me, and that is what I have grown to be addicted to in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've changed my focus, not so much on how can I get out of self, but more so how can I improve self, right? How can I be better than I was yesterday? And simple things of like, hey, I didn't like how you spoke to me like that, has gone on to do transformative things, you know, with the people that are closest to me. And when my mom passed away, I needed more time. And I didn't want to get loaded. I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to use drugs. I didn't even want to do anything destructive. But I definitely did not want to feel the way that I felt. What I got to do instead is keep showing up. You know, there's people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous have modeled that example to me. So what I realized today is that these things that I've gone through in my sobriety, and there's been countless, and there's been these tragic, happy, monumental, very minimal moments of growth that I have gotten to be a part of and specifically uniquely qualified for so that I can help another woman do the same. Did I come to Alcoholics Anonymous wanting to help you? No. I wanted to come to Alcoholics Anonymous because December 7th of 2020 was the first day ever in my entire life that I had the thought, but I also felt like I didn't want to die. And I knew that there had to be something more. And today I do have that life beyond wildest dreams that they talked about. And I thought it was the house on the hill and the dude with the washboard abs. And it turns out it's one ab. And it's not a Maserati in the driveway. It's a Mazda that's seat six. You know, and I thought it was all these things. But really, this life beyond my wildest dreams, what it means to me is that I can actually look another human being in the eye, right? That I can go into anywhere and everywhere and know that, like, I'm good with me. Right? That I know that I don't have to tell you I went to Del Taco, but really went to In-N-Out and lie about it. Why do I lie about such crazy things? I don't know, but I do. You know, I went to Del Taco today, you guys. Like, yay, you know? It's the fact that I have a loving home that's built on the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous that's held up by the rooms of the steps and the principles, right? But in inside these things is love and it's laughter and there's understanding and really there's growth. And it turns out that I'm at my most happiest state when I'm growing, and now today I work a program that affords me the ability to have endless amounts. Like, you know, and this loving God that I didn't even want to say or utter that three-letter word to continues to provide to me what I constantly can't do for myself. Never deny my wildest dreams at 2.5 years of sobriety when my oldest daughter said that she was embarrassed that I was her mom, did I think that she would be openly telling me she loved me today. Never. Never did I think that when you hurt my feelings, my first non-thought is to come for your throat. You know? Never did I think that I would get through 4.5 years without getting loaded in some capacity whatsoever. These were not things that I could do before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, but keep in mind that I can only do them because I continue to put in the work. It doesn't make me better and it doesn't make me worse. It just means that I want it. And so if you're newer than me, I hope that you want it just as much as you want to breathe, because that's kind of what you need to have, that vigor in order to stay here. Mark, thank you again so much for having me to come out, and thank you for letting me share.